Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
He's in Nashville at 9 o'clock.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from NPR member stations and
Lumber Liquidators, providing hardwood flooring for the home handyman and professionals. Catalogs are available, 1-800-HARDWOOD. And
Esurance,
offering tools to help customers track car repairs online or with a smartphone.
Esurance Car Insurance at esurance.com.
And The Healthy Back Store, offering the car cush seat support and other travel and back care products. Learn more at healthyback.com. And
Valvoline, maker of Next Gen Motor Oil, engine protection with oil made from 50% recycled stock. Learn more at valvoline.com.
Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio. With us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Grace Under Pressure department here at Car Talk Plaza. I guess not too long ago we had a discussion about a fellow who was trying to get rid of a rat that had taken up residence in his car.
I remember it.
And I think I remarked, I know I didn't, how it would scar me for life if a rat ran up my pant leg while I was driving. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
And I wondered if something like that ever really happened. Well, somebody named Key Halverston was listening and wanted to share this story with us. And Tommy has
the story. I have the letter here.
Go ahead, man.
Dear Click and Clack, back in the early 80s, my friend John was a young upstart attorney teaching law at the University of Illinois. And he had also managed to get himself elected to the board of directors for the Friends of the Springfield Zoo. John had a colleague who hosted a Springfield public access cable TV show and thought it would be a great idea for the zoo to do a homespun version of Joan Embry of the San Diego Zoo's appearances on The Tonight Show. The board loved the idea, and since John was the most telegenic of all the board members, he went on the show. After a brief question and answer period with the host, a handler from the Springfield Zoo brought out a European golden ferret. Remember those?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
John took the little guy in his arms and started discussing ferret virtues. What a great pet, just like a cat, so soft, gentle, loving. Meanwhile, the handler returned to the stage, this time with a Cook's Tree boa constrictor. The ferret took one look at the boa and intrinsically knew he was about to be somebody's lunch on public access TV. Fight or flight, the ferret flew out of John's arms and right up his fancy pant leg. This happens. Not wanting to ruin his television debut, John felt it best to keep the discussion going and opted to ignore the ferret as best he could.
Really? I would have dropped Drow in a heartbeat. Are you kidding me?
He did a remarkably good job, too, with the exception of a few on-screen twitches and jumps. You'd never know he had a ferret about to make a nest in his skivvies. Of course, the cameraman knew this to be the chance of a lifetime. When he could stop laughing, he made sure the protuberance scooting up and down John's pants was prominently featured on screen.
What a guy.
Back in those days, this was the most requested program on Springfield Public Access TV. I mean, the guy is sitting there on television, up his pants.
Well, sure, why not?
How could it even happen?
Well, it can happen. I mean, the specter of a rat going up my pants has always terrified me.
It's terrifying.
Well, because they gnaw.
They do.
I guess that's the part that really bothers me.
Yeah. They gnaw.
Well, we won't be doing any of that, I guess. Anyway, if you have a question about anything on four wheels rather than four legs, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk. Good letter.
Hi.
Hi.
Mary from Larchmont, New York.
Hi, Mary. Have you ever had any encounters with ferrets?
No, mercifully not.
You know, it reminds me, when I lived in Brookline, the girl downstairs owned a ferret as a pet.
Oh, ferrets are wonderful pets.
Oh, yeah.
Except they have a tendency to run up your pant leg. But other than that, they're good pets. They bite a little bit, though. Anyway, what's going
Hi,
on, Mary?
How are you? I have a 2003 Toyota Camry that quacks.
It quacks, huh?
It quacks. Whenever I have to make a very sharp turn, like out of a parking space or out the end of my driveway, this quacking sound comes out of the steering column. And it's embarrassing to the whole family. I noticed it last winter. It didn't happen all summer. And now that it's starting to get a little cool in the morning, I notice it when I go out the driveway in the morning.
Can you make the sound for us?
Can I make the sound? All right, I'll try.
Of course you can make the sound. And you knew we were going to ask you, didn't you?
Okay, I'll try. Hold on. It's something like...
Oh, it's just a short little thing like that.
It's just a very short little thing.
And if you if you move the steering wheel away from where you were, it goes away?
Yeah.
And if you don't move the steering wheel, does it still only do it like once?
Yeah.
In other words, does it do it when do you have to be moving to get the noise, or will it do it when you've turned the wheel only?
It does it when I've turned the wheel only.
Okay, and so moving the car does nothing to make the noise continue. It only makes that noise once, yeah, basically, when you've turned the wheel all the way to the left or right.
That's correct.
See, you've given us a great piece of information there.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference, because it means the noise is coming out of the steering wheel and not out of the wheels or something else.
Yeah, no, I can definitely hear it. It definitely sounds like it's coming from the steering wheel.
It's coming from right there, huh?
Yeah, it's often the case that the way that the steering column is installed in the car with the vinyl, you know, the plastic covers that go around where the multifunction switch is, you know, the wiper switch and directional switch, all that.
Right.
Where the steering wheel goes through all that mess, sometimes that plastic will get shrunk, especially in cold weather, and to the point where it can be impinged upon by the rotating, you know, steering column and make that noise.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's probably nothing to worry about. On the other hand, there could be a rat in there.
Or a ferret.
I thought there was a duck in there.
Or a duck. It could be a duck.
Bird flu from my car, you know?
Yeah.
You can try spraying that area, and you can't hurt anything in there. You can try spraying it with a silicone lubricant.
Okay.
But in the meantime, there's no need to worry.
Okay.
And it's going to happen worse as the weather gets colder.
Right. I figured.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Silicone spray.
And don't waste our time with such silly. Come on, we got people who are on death's door, and we're dealing with ducks.
I'm sorry.
What, all right, Mary?
You're such serious guys, you know?
Yeah, Mary, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Nice talking to you, too. Thanks for your help.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Sheila in St. Louis.
Hi, Sheila.
Sheila.
Right.
What's up, Sheila?
Well, I had one of my license plates stolen, just one, because the other one had bolts that were so rusted and threads that were so stripped, they couldn't get that one off.
Yeah.
And so I had to get new license plates, and of course, and I'd want to know how to put them on so that they won't get stolen again. And also, the front thing that the plate is attached to is also really rusted, so I'm afraid that if I screw something onto them, the whole thing's going to fall off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can buy at either your dealership, I don't know what kind of a car you have, but
Honda.
You can go to the Honda dealer and buy a new license plate holder.
And I would do that if the one you have is all rusty. And mm-hmm. then you can put the license plates on. This is going to be tough, because you can make it, if you're going to make it impenetrable so that no one can steal them, mm-hmm. you're probably going to make it so you can't get them off when you have to get new ones.
No,
well, what happens in Missouri?
We put stickers on them every year.
So they last forever.
Right.
Well, you can put them on with self-locking nuts, for example, and the nuts can't come off. Or you could put a little stuff called Loctite on the nuts, which someone could get off if he really tried.
You could use, and I've never quite figured this out.
Super glue.
No, you could use the bolts they use on the swinging doors in toilets. Now, why anyone would ever want to steal? You go into a public restroom, and there are these screws which you need a special device to remove.
And
they're one-way screws.
They're gone.
Now, why anyone would want to steal a swinging door off a toilet? I don't know.
Or maybe someone just didn't know how to open it and had to get out. And he figured it was easier to take the screws out.
But there are screws available to the trades. I mean, which cannot be removed once installed.
What about those of us not in those trades?
Well, then you could as my brother said, you can bugger up the hexagon of the bolt and make it round so that once it's on there, no one can get it off. But Loctite is good enough. And the chances of your plate being stolen again, I mean, the chances of it being stolen the first time are one in a million.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's one in a million now, too. It didn't change.
So no way of electrifying that whole thing, huh?
Sheila, you have a mean streak, huh, Sheila? But I would use Loctite or some such thing like that, which is a chemical you can buy at an auto parts store, which when you put the nut and bolt together makes them very difficult to get off. But rest assured, someone with the right tools will get the thing off.
Do they have special kinds of like nuts and bolts at the auto parts store?
Not the kind I mentioned, with not the toilet, not the ones that come in to pay toilets. You know, those are unique.
Yeah,
and like I said, I've never seen anyone walk out of one of those
with a door.
With the door. So I don't know what they use those for. What are you doing tonight? We're going to steal some toilet doors.
Well, maybe there's a black market for them. How do we know?
There may be.
Sheila, good luck to you, and thanks for calling.
Okay, well, listen, thanks, and you enjoy the weather up there.
Hey, thank
see
you, Sheila.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Andy from Oregon. How you doing?
Hi, Andy.
Andy,
we're doing great.
Oregon.
What's happening, man?
Okay, I got a question for you. This is going to be probably going to fall into the unusual category.
Paranormal?
Another one of those.
I was driving my 94 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo across the U.S. last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to, with my girlfriend, and I got to Moab. And boy, it was really hot that day. It was pushing about 95, 100 degrees. And we've been driving around for about 5 hours, taking in the sights. And we had brought water, but it was for us.
Uh-huh.
So we drank the water, and then my car, on the way back to Moab at the end of the day, started to overheat.
Ooh.
Sure.
And that wasn't really evident until my girlfriend noticed steam jettisoning from the front of the hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when you say jettisoning, you could actually see like a stream of steam coming out from somewhere?
No, not. I wouldn't say like a jet.
Wafting.
You could see it pluming.
Right.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
So we pull over. We'll pull out the manual and we look at that. She's concerned about the loss of fluid. And this is where the question kind of gets ridiculous. We pop the hood. And I just say, hey, let's just let it cool and not worry about it. And we'll just drive very slowly back to town. She says, no, we got to add some water to the radiator. And I say, we don't have any water. And we talk about this some more. And
oh,
I,
no.
Yeah.
Not really.
Huh?
No, go ahead.
So she says, add something to it. And I say, no. And then she says, well, we've been drinking water all day.
Oh, I knew it. I knew
right.
it.
And I said, that is not necessary. We don't need to do that. She said, you could probably replace what we lost in steam. And, you know, she's only talking about me. She's not talking in the first person. I had to stand up top there.
But it's such a small opening. I mean, how could you aim for that little hole?
What are you implying here?
So, I mean, you confirmed that the level of fluid in the radiator was low indeed.
Yeah, it was normally, you see the green stuff kind of pushed up to the top.
Yeah.
Okay, it was lower. But, see, I would never have done this alone. If I was alone, I would have waited, driven the car into town. But she
sure.
said, no,
let's
no.
put the blame on her.
Yeah, well, she's not here right now.
Yeah, well, of course, that's why.
The question is, I was pretty dehydrated to begin with. And I, you know how it is when you've been in the desert all day and...
He is concentrated.
That's right. Yeah, it sort of has a different viscosity to it.
Yeah.
Anyways, we drove back to town and...
And you made it.
Yeah. What I want to know is, it hasn't really been operated much since then. The urine is still in there.
Yeah, you're worrying about whether it has any corrosive...
Yeah, does it? It had a pretty acidic content because I was so dehydrated. Is there any corrosive danger to that in my radiator? And don't, hey, you know what?
Boy.
Don't tell me to flush the radiator.
Okay? Oh,
you thought about this, haven't you?
I know you guys. I've been trying to figure out what advice you might give me. I'm going to beat you to the punch, okay?
Well, first of all, you it's impossible that you are the first person to ever have done this.
Okay.
Of course not.
So, I mean, we don't really know what the corrosive nature of this liquid, this mystery liquid is. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I'm sure that we have many listeners or many visitors to our website who have engaged in this peculiar activity and would be willing to share with us their experiences. I mean, you may go back and find that the Jeep is gone.
Yeah, the
right?
entire cooling system may have just rotted away.
On the other hand, I suspect nothing happened. I mean, you added perhaps a pint to a system that holds probably,
Eight quarts.
15 quarts.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you didn't add much. And most of what you added was water, believe it or not.
Right.
Depending. On the other hand, they don't make toilets out of porcelain for nothing.
Right. That's true.
But what do we know? We need a call. We need advice of a urologist.
Exactly.
Well, the whole episode leads to an overall broader question, which is, I did go into the manual later, and it talks about, you know, the little plastic reservoir that leads to the radiator?
Yeah.
They say add a 50-50 solution of approved coolant and water.
Yes.
Why not just add water all the time? What is in the coolant that makes it so special?
There's rust inhibitor. Oh. There is water pump lubricant.
Okay.
And there's antifreeze, which didn't matter to you in Moab, but it does matter to us up here in the great frozen north.
Okay.
So
okay. That's
really the reason.
But you didn't dilute the antifreeze. You did not inhibit. You did not uninhibit the rust inhibitor. You didn't do anything bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about it.
But I would flush it. I would definitely flush.
You would definitely flush the radiator.
And we'll ask our resident chemist, Jim Davis. He knows all about these things.
Okay. Now, are you going to post this for me and the other person?
Oh, yes, we are.
Certainly.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I want to say thank you for your help.
Well, Andy, thank you for being so candid with us and so forthcoming with this information. I'm sure, like I said, there are millions of people that have done this, but you're the only one that has admitted to it.
Well, I don't mind admitting to it when you only know my first name.
Yeah, well, we'll know everything about you within a few hours. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Andy.
All right, it's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, I'll have the answer to last week's puzzler.
And I'll do what I usually do.
That's right. Just try not to snore as loud, okay?
Okay.
Anyway, last week's puzzler was about a bogus letter sent to Henry Ford. And we'll have all the details and more of your car questions in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
If I had a car like you, I wouldn't sit around and hide at home. I'd get out on the range and I'd roam. Car like you, if I had a car at all.
Support for Car Talk and NPR comes from our new line of realistic-looking click-and-clack rubber face masks for Halloween or stopping hiccups from NPR, NPR member stations, and
Quick Lane Tire and Auto Centers, providing service for cars and trucks without an appointment, including evenings and weekends. Details at quicklane.com. And
Angie's List, provider of local consumer reviews on contractors and doctors, now has reviews on classic car professionals. Details at angieslist.com. And
Valvoline, maker of next-gen motor oil. Engine protection with oil made from 50% recycled stock. Learn more at valvoline.com.
And even though Wall Street protesters turn and head towards network headquarters whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
With unemployment at 9%, politicians from the left to the right are calling for jobs, jobs, jobs. But what jobs? I'm Armin Alney. On To the Point, local governments are laying off workers. The private sector is focused on profits, and tax increases are off the table. But aren't taxes the price of civilization? Has America lost its dedication to civic virtue? Is it time to return to traditional priorities? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock. What could be crazier than getting on a jam-packed train in India or taking a night bus across the Andes? Going way out of your way to travel on the world's most notoriously dangerous rides and then writing a book about it. Carl Hoffman shares how he survived his adventures all around the world on the Lunatic Express and what it taught him. And listeners share their own memorable travel adventures and discoveries. It's all on this week's Travel with Rick Steves. Sunday mornings at 6.
Support for Car Talk on WPLN comes from the Bridgestone Americas Trust Fund, the charitable arm of Bridgestone Americas, whose nearly 5,000 teammates in the state of Tennessee share a passion for excellence, and by Overbrook School, providing a Christ-centered, nurturing environment focused on traditional Catholic values and academic excellence. For prospective parents, the fall open house will be held October 19th and November 16th. Details are online at overbrook.edu.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. Now, this puzzler was folkloric,
yeah,
historic, and quasi-automotive, and that was the hint.
Quasi-automotive?
Yeah.
You said that last week, too?
I did. Wasn't that a good hint?
I lost that.
Yeah, well, that's why
that
you have
went
to,
right by me,
have
man.
To pay attention.
You're usually spewing out such nonsense that we don't know what to believe.
That's my strategy.
Quasi-automotive, that slipped right past me.
Go
ahead.
Say it again. It didn't slip past those who
got the right answer.
Got the right answer. And this, by the way, came from some guy named Larry Hall. And he writes, John knew he had secured his fortune after his father died in Dearborn, Michigan. John began cleaning out the attic, and while going through a scrapbook, he came across the treasure of a lifetime. It was an original letter to none other than Henry Ford, signed by President William McKinley himself. And it came on White House stationery.
Oh!
In the upper left-hand corner, it said, The White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., March 3rd, 1898. And it was addressed to Henry Ford, 58 Bagley Avenue, Detroit, Michigan. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Dear Mr. Ford, we received your letter dated February 1st. This letter is written to thank you for your offer to present a gift of one two-cylinder, four-cycle gasoline engine-powered quadricycle that you have developed in your workshop in Detroit for use by the president. And while such a vehicle is of high interest to machinists and hobbyists, I do not feel the automobile can be perfected to replace the safety and comfort of the carriages we have available to us here at the White House. Please feel free to write again should you ever design and manufacture standard horse-drawn buggies. I will happily forward that information to my Treasury Secretary, Lyman Gage, for possible procurement. Till that time, I must thank you for, and yet decline, your generous offer. Sincerely, William McKinley. William McKinley, President of the United States.
Yeah.
Now, knowing that
lot of stuff in there. I mean, could be that's Ford's wrong address. Bagley Avenue. Who ever heard of Bagley Avenue? I mean, there are a lot of things here.
Right.
1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Maybe it was 1601 back then. What are we, man, this is tough.
There are lots of things here. Well, that's why it's... Yeah, folkloric, well, actually, historic?
Actually, what was the question?
I didn't get to the question.
Oh,
yet.
I remembered the question, but you didn't get it.
So anyway, he figures it's going to be worth a fortune, and he takes the letter to the curator of the Henry Ford Museum in Detroit. Another obfuscation. The curator expressed surprise and great interest at the find, but after several readings, he looked at John and said, It's bogus. How did the curator know?
Hmm.
Yeah. Boy, and the biggest hint was it was quasi-automotive. So it didn't have anything to do with the fact that he didn't make this thing in 1898 or something was wrong with some of the history as far as the automotive end of it was concerned. But what was wrong was that in 1898, it was not called the White House. It wasn't called the White House until Theodore Roosevelt became president. After McKinley was assassinated in 1898, it was called the Executive Mansion.
Get out!
And it couldn't have come from the White House in 1898 because the White House didn't exist.
As such.
Do we have a winner?
Ooh, the winner is Rich Block from Antrim, New Hampshire. I wonder if he is related to my friend Les Block.
Must be.
From Minion, a president of University of Minnesota. And for having your answer, Rich Block, correct, selected at random from the small pile of correct answers that we did get, you're going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which he can get a copy of our book, Ask, Click, and Clack. It's a collection of our newspaper columns in which people ask us car questions, and then we largely ignore the question and write about whatever we feel like writing about.
Oh, kind of like what we do here on the show, right?
Yeah. With the added bonus that you don't have to listen to us.
That's when you just turn the page. Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. In the meantime, let's see who's waiting patiently on hold for us. Here, we're here at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Helena from Madison, Wisconsin.
Helena, like the capital of Montana.
You've got it.
Is that the capital of Montana?
Madison,
yes,
Wisconsin.
Yes, that's right.
Madison, which just a few short years ago was voted the best place in the United States to live by Money Magazine.
Indeed.
And it just goes to show you how little they know about anything at all. Maybe not even about money.
Well, it scored very well on all the rating scales except the weather.
Climate, yeah. Climate.
11% it got.
Yeah.
But I say that's okay. It keeps the riffraff out.
Well, what I remember about the ratings was that it rated very highly on public transportation.
Yes.
And very lowly, just follow the terminology, on entertainment, culture, and things to do.
Oh,
which indicated that... there was nothing to do, but there were plenty of ways to get there.
Right.
I don't believe it. That's just not true.
Well, that may not be true.
And there's very good public transportation to Chicago, if that's a problem.
That's what they meant.
There you go.
I get it now.
Right.
So what's up, Helena?
Well, my husband, bless his heart, has an AMC fixation.
Oh, great.
So he's been bugging me in the last couple of weeks, like, you know, look at this, we should go and see this AMC, and he's been dragging me out to see these wretched AMCs out on the west side.
Yeah.
And then the other day he said, look, here's a really, really good one, we got to go see this one. So it turns out to be a 1966 Rambler Classic.
Oh!
Yeah. So we get out there, we look at this beautiful car, which is in very good shape. The body is in nice shape. The interior is in very good shape. It's been sitting in a barn for the last 15 years.
Where it belongs.
was it Rambler Classic Blue?
It's black.
Black. Oh.
It's the straight six 232.
Yeah.
And it runs, but only in reverse.
Only in reverse.
Well, you'll be able to back it out of the barn. Answer me one question.
Yeah.
Does your husband, is there any plaid in his wardrobe?
Funny you should mention that.
Come on, fess up.
Something else. No. He's really, he's not a nerd.
How thick
are the soles? Well, you didn't answer the plaid question. Is there any plaid in his wardrobe?
She refuses to answer. On the grounds that it might incriminate her husband.
That's right.
So what's the question here, Helena?
The question is, well, so we test drove it in reverse and we bought it and everything. Down the driveway, it ran beautifully until you tried to apply the brakes.
And what'd you do, back it up all the way home?
No. We had it towed. It was too far.
Is it a stick shift or an automatic?
It's an automatic. Well, when we bought it, we thought, well, this is pretty tricky. And the guy said, don't worry, there's a replacement transmission in the trunk.
Oh, how sweet it is.
So we have this big old garage at home with a pit in it. And the car is positioned over the pit right now. And now this is the question.
Is there any way that you can get the car to go right into the pit?
This is an easy but dangerous job.
Okay.
No, it's time-consuming, but it's basically just nuts and bolts.
Don't let him do it by himself, though.
No, I'm going to help him, of course.
Of course.
Well, yeah, but you know how much that transmission weighs when you have...
Well, that's another thing.
Yeah.
You may want to rent for yourselves a transmission jack.
Right.
There you go. You put in the one that you've got in the trunk and hope that it works, and then... Your husband can spend the long, cold winter there in Madison, Wisconsin.
Which is due to start, like, tomorrow.
Or yesterday. And he can put this transmission on the dining room table and rebuild it.
So you think we can do this, then?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. This didn't have that wacko rear-end thing, did it?
Ooh. The torque tube?
The torque tube.
Well, it has a torque converter.
No.
Torque tube instead of drive.
Oh, it says rear springs will raise torque tube slightly at front.
Oh, yeah, you'll never do it.
Caution, do not allow converter to fall out.
Yeah. Okay, it's been nice talking to you, Helen. We'll be looking for the obituary in the Madison paper.
See, this car, instead of having a traditional drive shaft, has this thing called a torque tube.
Uh-huh.
And... It doesn't come out nice and easy like a drive shaft does.
Do we need it to come out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because the transmission won't come out, so it requires...
Unless you can cut the car in half. If you find out, you can saw the car in half. You can pull out the transmission without taking the rear end out. Yeah. But I think you're going to have to take the rear end out. Read the book carefully. Yeah, yeah, read all the instructions carefully before starting any work.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
give it a try. I mean,
you know what to do? Xerox the instructions and send them to us. And
okay.
We'll tell you if you ought to try it at home or not.
Send us a self-addressed stamped envelope.
How about if I call you in a few weeks when we're halfway through the process?
Sure, start first. That's the best way.
Yes, because we haven't really started yet. We've had a look at it.
But fax us the stuff.
Bring your cell phone in case you can't get the transmission off your chest.
Yeah, right.
See you, Helena.
Call you from the pit.
Call us from the pits.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Jeff from Davis, California.
That Jeff with a G or a J?
Jeff with a J. My father wouldn't allow it to be with a G.
God bless the man.
Sissy. It was too sissy to be with a G.
Yeah.
And remember, we didn't say that.
Yeah, that's right. Now, you guys, you know where Davis, California is.
Yes, we do know. Yeah.
Okay. My problem, it takes a little background to explain to you.
Yeah.
My father, who is a docent down at the Peterson Automotive Museum in L.A., and I've been talking about this for some time, and that is the identification of a car's soul.
Yeah. This is good.
Like, I had a 1969 Volkswagen bus that had a soul, and I had a Datsun pickup that had no soul, and he had a 1969 Pontiac Grand Prix, which had a soul, and a 1976 Thunderbird, which had no soul.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a car now that has a soul. I've bonded with this car, and I love it, and it's not a good car sometimes. It is a 1990 Trooper Isuzu, or Isuzu Trooper with the four-cylinder engine in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Recently, a while ago, I gave it, hoping to save some money, gave it to my neighbor, who's a mechanic, and asked him to do the 60,000-mile service on it. And he went and did that. And, of course, on his drive home, he discovered that he had left the coolant out of the car. And so
that's a problem.
Cooked the engine. So he obviously, for free, reground the head and did a valve job on it. But shortly thereafter, the car began to drink oil.
Mm-hmm. Not surprising.
I mean, when he fried the engine, all he did was the top end. He just did valves.
That's right.
He didn't do anything in the cylinders.
Nope.
Yeah, well.
That's what my new mechanic told me.
Yeah. He should have done it, and he's responsible for having ruined your engine.
Well,
all by himself.
Yeah, I know, and he's my neighbor. But
you can always move.
Yeah, that's right.
Sue his sorry butt and move. Sue everybody.
Sue the bum. No, I like him. He's a good neighbor.
Yeah.
But
it's too bad.
I really like this car. And now
that's too bad.
My new mechanic has recommended that I either rebuild the engine or replace it. But I have bonded with this car and identified its soul.
Oh,
in fact,
you think
our
that
souls
it's...
have merged, and the question for you
I know
is
the
very
question.
Straightforward.
I know the question.
Yeah.
If I change the engine, do I change the soul of this automobile? Well, I have some engine that some housewife in Pacoima has driven her kid to daycare with every day instead of using it like a real four-wheel drive.
Well, they say, I mean, at least all the sci-fi movies indicate that when you get a transplant of any kind, there's a piece of the person from whom the transplant comes.
Like Donovan's brain.
Donovan's brain, exactly right. I mean, so if you get somebody's liver, then all of a sudden things happen to you. You change. You are not the same person anymore. Certainly you get somebody's heart or lungs or some such thing. It has to have a significant change on who you are.
Oh, no.
And so even though I, too, would agree from a technical standpoint that a remanufactured engine is the way to go, I would have to go along with the idea that the soul will definitely undergo drastic change. On the other hand, how much worse is it to put in new pistons, new head?
We don't need a new head. This guy did the head. What you need to do is pop the head off.
All you need is new pistons.
Just a ring job.
Mm.
Yeah, you need a ring job.
Maybe.
Just a ring job.
Yeah.
Get this guy can do it in his driveway. Just like he has a shop. Is that what the story is?
Yes, that's right.
Well, there's no reason why he shouldn't do rings on it for free. Have you approached him with this scenario?
No, I have not.
Does he know that it's burning oil like mad?
No.
What you need to do is you need to construct a conduit that leads to his bedroom window so that you can hook your tailpipe to it every morning and have his bedroom fill up with smoke when you start the thing.
I like this guy as a neighbor, though.
and I'm sure he likes you, too.
Sure.
He will, at least, until you ask him to rebuild the engine. But the truth is, he can take the pan off of that and take the head off and pop the pistons out. He doesn't have to do anything to the bearings because it's unlikely he did any harm to them. Throw a set, he can hone the cylinder walls, throw a set of rings in it, and he can have you in traffic the next day.
And that will definitely stop the oil burning. There's no question about it. And it will maintain the existing sole, in my humble opinion.
And I would agree to pay for the parts. So, look, I'll pay for the rings and the gasket set, a few $100, and you do the labor.
On the other hand, I mean, it does introduce the more metaphysical aspect of where is the sole?
This is the fundamental question.
Isn't the soul of a car is the engine.
I don't know. I mean, this is a question which has plagued philosophers for millennia.
It's the heart of the car.
The heart.
It pumps the lifeblood.
The soul.
It's the heart and soul. You know, where's the soul?
I don't know.
The transmission?
No, I mean, it may be an aura.
You know where the soul is? It's in the headliner.
It may be in the headliner.
Yeah, or the rearview mirror. As long as you keep the rearview mirror, Jeff, you're all right.
This is not a simple question.
Well, Jeff, you have the unique opportunity to find out, because if you do put a rebuilt engine and the thing dissociates itself from you, then you will know that the engine was the soul.
Huh? This is good. I like that.
Yeah, put a rebuilt in there and see if you start driving kids to soccer. We were picking up kids in the street going, want to go to soccer? See you, Jeff.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, look, you know what part of the show it's time for now?
The swimsuit competition.
No, definitely not.
Well, we should try that. Have you seen Bugsy in his two-piece?
Two pieces of what? 4x8 plywood.
My brother will be back with a brand new puzzler, and we'll take more of your calls in about a minute, so please stay tuned.
7:50 home, cycle, cafe style, chrome and black. If you wanna ride, hang on tight. 7:50, cycle, cafe style, chrome and black. If you wanna ride, hang on tight, right on the back.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from the Nobel Prize money we won with our study, How to Shrink an Audience in an Expanding Universe, from NPR, NPR member stations, and
Quick Lane Tire and Auto Centers, servicing cars and trucks with factory-trained technicians at locations nationwide. Learn more at quicklane.com. And
Esurance, providing car insurance shopping tools like real-time comparison quotes and coverage counselors. Learn more at esurance.com. And
Valvoline, maker of next-gen motor oil. Engine protection with oil made from 50% recycled stock. Learn more at Valvoline.com. And
the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program, towing away your car and selling it. To support your NPR station, with your permission, of course.
And even though levitating yogis fall out of the air whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Nashville Ballet performs Cinderella, Where Anything Can Happen with a Little Magic. A classic score performed by the Nashville Symphony and new choreography from Paul Vasterling tells Cinderella's story with a handsome prince, four magic fairies, and two men as ugly stepsisters. Combining drama and comedy on stage offers a classical ballet experience for the whole family. Only three performances, October 28th through the 30th at TPAC, presented by Bridgestone America's Trust Fund. Tickets at 782-4040 or the newly redesigned NashvilleBallet.com.
Thank you. I'm Krista Tippett. Next time on Being, a profound stutter as a child left Alan Rabinowitz unable to communicate and to prefer animals to people. Now a conservationist of tigers and jaguars and an explorer of the world's last wild places, he has extraordinary insight into both animals and the human condition. Join me. That's from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
Support for Car Talk and WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from Off the Beaten Path Studio Tour, a self-guided open house tour showcasing 29 artists in 11 studios around Smithville and Center Hill Lake, Friday, October 28th through 30th. Information at offthebeatenpathtour.com. And by The Web School, where talented students from multiple states and countries learn together, preparing them for a future in a global economy. More information is available at thewebschool.com or 888-C-WEB.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
I can hardly wait.
Well, this was supplied by Shelley Payne. But I had to fix it because it wasn't really up to...
It's your job, man. It really wasn't. You can't just accept the stuff and read it. It's your job not to fix, now, but to create.
Create, even. To hone, to fine-tune.
Exactly.
All right, here it is. Several years ago, my father-in-law, who lives in Minnesota, had trouble with his late model Cadillac DeVille. His battery kept dying every couple of days. He would get it jump-started, and it would run fine for a few days, but then would die again. So he took it to the dealership. They checked it out. They couldn't find anything wrong.
Really?
One morning, after there had been several inches of snow, he went out, and sure enough, what? The battery was dead.
Yeah.
So he jump-started it, and he was bummed out. He went into town to get a cup of coffee at the local drugstore. Now, being that he lives in such a small town, he went and parked right in front of the drugstore. And while he was drinking his coffee, he complained to the pharmacist about how his car was driving him nuts. The pharmacist asked, "Is that your car right out there?" And he said,
"Want some Prozac?
I'm going to slip you some pills in your coffee."
Yeah, you won't care.
And he said, "Well, yes, that is my car." And the pharmacist said, "I know why your battery is dying."
Wow. The pharmacist said that.
The pharmacist.
The pharmacist.
Now, it has nothing to do with his being a pharmacist.
Don't say that.
It has everything to do.
You have people struggling for weeks trying to figure out what the hell does pharmacy have to do with it.
You know almost everything the pharmacist knew.
Wow.
That's the hint.
We know almost everything, but do we know
the answer?
Specific thing that he knew?
Not really, no. No, if you did, then...
We know almost everything, most of which is irrelevant.
No. I mean, everything is good. I mean, Minnesota, snow, small town, drugstore, pharmacy, Prozac.
Yeah.
We got everything.
Morning. It was morning.
Morning, afternoon, evening.
I love it. I love it.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the underside of a Jura Capresso Impresa S9 Avant-Garde Super Automatic Espresso Machine featuring automatic or manual frothing. 4 one-touch beverage buttons, individually programmable for cup size, brew strength, and, of course, temperature. Low noise, commercial-grade, solid-steel, conical burr coffee, and espresso grinder with 6 finesse settings. Ooh. Electronic bean level sensor, and 2 stainless steel line thermal block heating systems. And send it along with a bistro table, 4 chairs, and a 40,000 BTU outdoor propane heater. We're going to need it pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
To Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our first city.
Matt02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a car question for us, we're doing very well today with the car questions.
Oh, yeah.
We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Diane Young with Cordova, Tennessee.
Diane?
Yes.
Cordova, huh?
Uh-huh.
Tennessee.
Outside of Memphis, Tennessee.
Outside of Memphis,
mm-hmm.
In the deep southwest corner of Tennessee.
That is correct.
What's up?
Well, I have a car that I acquired from my mother-in-law, and it's a 92 Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had it for about 2 weeks. Now, even before I got the car from her, I knew it had this problem, but it was still such a deal. You know, it was being from my mother-in-law and all, we had to get the car.
Yeah. You were in the pressure in some ways.
Well, not necessarily.
I don't want to get you into any trouble with the old MIL.
There you go.
Okay, but I understand. I'm reading between the lines here, Diane. And
you couldn't have said no to this car for a variety of reasons.
Whatever they may have been. And we won't discuss that.
We won't discuss
that. Okay. She's a great mother-in-law.
Oh, I'm sure. It's almost redundant, isn't it, to say great and mother-in-law in the same sentence. It isn't even necessary.
No.
Perhaps it's an oxymoron for
perhaps
some people.
It is. All right.
What I have is, if I'm taking the car on an interstate, smooth road, interstate going anywhere from like 60 miles an hour, 65 miles an hour, up to whatever, 75, however fast you can drive around here, what it feels like is the back end is doing a real soft, subtle fishtail, almost all on its own. It kind of swings to the left and it swings back to the right and it'll swing back to the left.
What's the rhythm?
Yeah, what is
there
the rhythm?
There is no specific rhythm.
But
there
is it at a high frequency or a low?
So if you're doing 60, is it or is it more boom, boom, boom?
Well, it's not making any noise.
No, I mean, is that the rhythm? You feel it go left to right?
Is it more like a tango or a samba?
Right.
It's more of a left then right then left then right.
Ah, I like it.
Then right.
I like it. I like it.
Not left right.
Yeah, okay.
Not a foxtrot.
Just
a nice, and it's not jerky, and I don't feel it in the steering. However, I feel that I must steer to correct it.
Yeah.
And if I don't, then I feel like I'm going right off into the ditch. It's going to take me right off one direction.
Yeah.
Scary, huh?
It kind of is.
See, now you've assumed, and I don't know why, maybe if I had driven the car, I would make the same assumption, that the problem is in the back.
Because
it feels like it's in the back, but I think that the back and the front are connected.
And you know what? By the middle. Connected by the middle.
It feels like it's broken in the middle.
Good description.
Excellent.
Could be so many things.
No, I have two, but go ahead.
You have two.
I have two. Okay.
Are they the same two?
You two first.
It could be something as simple as two tires in the back or the front of different sizes.
Mm.
Is your mother-in-law, between you and me, Diane, is your mother-in-law a cheapskate? Is she a specially generous kind of person?
Oh, she's very generous.
She is. Okay. Yeah. And she wouldn't go, like, pick up tires by the side of the road
that someone was throwing away
and stick them on the back of her car.
No, she wouldn't do that.
So, and you should check that.
No, she might. Never mind.
Sorry, we can cut that part out, Diane.
All right. So, it could be tires of different sizes.
Okay.
It could be tires with different air pressures. It could be alignment.
Okay.
And that's my two.
Now, let me ask you this real quick before I hear the other possibilities.
Yeah.
She actually had it test driven when I drove the car, and I said, Bernice, this is happening. And she said, I can't feel it, and she's driven the car for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she took it in, and she had the mechanics test drive it. They said they didn't feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she wasn't with them when they drove it, so I don't know if they drove it 40 miles an hour down, you know, a four-lane road, or if they actually took it on the interstate.
And you also don't know how she introduced the problem. I mean, she could have said, there's something terribly wrong with my car, I'd like you to test drive it. Or she could have said, my wacko daughter-in-law insisted that I come over here. I know she's crazy, but drive around the block anyway, and so I can go tell her that she's nuts.
Yeah, I would guess they didn't drive it.
That way she'll get the car, right.
Yeah,
they probably didn't drive it fast enough.
I'm thinking they probably didn't.
Yeah. Well, what are your two?
Well, when you began, Diane, your little story an hour ago.
That's okay.
The thing that immediately leapt into my mind was that your alignment was off.
Okay.
And if they didn't drive it fast enough to get the sensation, then they wouldn't have even suspected that. And if they didn't put it on the alignment machine, they'd have no way of really knowing, unless the tires were worn out very peculiarly.
Okay.
But if the tires aren't that old, they may not be showing any signs of this alignment problem.
Okay.
But I would guess that your front end alignment is out, and that can make it. We've had cars go out of our shop in cases where we've installed struts and haven't aligned the car properly, and it feels you're riding around on bowling balls. And every little turn you make, as soon as you turn the wheel a little bit, that movement gets exaggerated. So you turn a little bit to the right to compensate for maybe a truck going past you, and next thing you know, you move 10 feet to the right instead of 10 inches.
Right.
And then you try to correct, and you end up overcorrecting.
Yeah.
Ask them to align the thing, because I have a strong suspicion that that's it.
Okay.
All righty.
Well, I'll do that. Thank you very much.
See you, Diane. Thanks
for
your call.
Great.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good luck. Say hello to the mother-in-law.
Bernice.
Tell her I said to say hello, and I never met a mother-in-law I didn't like.
There you go. Thank you so much.
High five.
Thanks, Diane.
Especially when she was someone else's mother. 1-888-227-8255, which happens to be 1-888-CAR-TALK.
What? What are the chances of that?
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jim calling from Woburn, Mass.
Hey.
So what's up, man?
Okay, the saga starts. I was driving home on the highway, and my thermostat maxed out, and then the dreaded red check engine light comes on. Mm-hmm. I knew that was trouble, but I was trying to get home. I was in Connecticut at the time.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, there's a green smoke bellowing into the car. I had a passenger in the car that was so the hot cooler.
And you said, I know I can make it. It's only 110 miles.
That's exactly what I was saying. But needless to say, we didn't make it. I barely got. I was in the right lane, barely pulled off. And so anyway, that's how it all started. So what happened? The diagnosis was a blown heater core.
Yeah, I figured that. Either you have to have a Ford Taurus or a Volkswagen.
Actually, it's a 93 Honda Civic.
Exactly. Oh, that. That was my third choice.
So I see a couple options. The first one, obviously, what you guys are thinking, is get it fixed. But I'm getting prices anywhere from $500 to $1,000 because it's a very labor-intensive project from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and unnecessarily so, but that's another topic for another day.
And I'm the kind of, I can basically change my oil and change a flat. Beyond that, don't ask me to do any car work. So I'm thinking I'm going to get my whole dashboard out, which this project involves. Then I'm not going to be able to get it back in. So I'm looking for an alternate heat source.
There you go.
So you see where I'm going, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was immediately going to suggest that you just take it out of the circuit, which is relatively easy to do.
I might add before we go any further, Jim.
Yeah.
That it's likely that the head gasket is going to blow in about 6 weeks anyway.
Oh, perfect.
So,
what you were hoping for?
Well, because you overheated it so badly.
Okay.
You stretched the head gasket beyond the point where it can return to normal service.
So what are we looking at for a bill on that?
Oh, that's $1,000. Everything's $1,000.
Oh, okay. So we'll just round it to okay.
So we'll just round it off.
To $1,000.
To $1,000. That's why I don't think you should fix the heater core.
Perfect. That's what I want to hear. That's what I'm looking for you guys to tell me. I thought you were going to think I was crazy, but okay, go ahead.
I mean, so for the next 6 weeks, you won't have any heat, but you can wear your Bronco Nagurski long underwear.
What if my mother gets in the car?
Nobody will get in the car with you.
Okay. No. No, and the thing is that you may think you can tough it out now.
Right.
We've had a couple of chilly days. You say, this isn't so bad. I'll wear a hat. I'll wear gloves. But I'll tell you, when it's 9 degrees and it's snowing and the window is so fogged up that you can't see, you'll pay $3,000 for that heater core. And understand that the price will be inflated when the appropriate season arises.
Okay.
Yeah, and there may in fact be alternative sources of heat.
Okay.
But the truth is that the defroster is really the biggest issue.
So there's no alternate, in other words, there's no sort of a small heater, like a space heater that you could get for an RV or something that would plug into my cigarette lighter that would heat the car.
There are, I suppose, but no, there's not one of them that can heat the car.
Right.
I don't think you can pull enough energy out of that the charging system to heat the car. I could be wrong.
That's what I'm concerned about.
One advantage you have is that it is a pretty small car, and you might want to go and buy one of these things.
How much value, Jim, do you place on your life?
Exactly. Well,
you could also get yourself a nice little propane heater. And you could it up on the front seat.
I could grill some hot dogs.
And you could grill hot dogs, and you could aim it, and those work. You get plenty of heat out of them.
Right.
You'll be dead in an hour.
Well, here's what I was going to say.
If it doesn't blow you up, it'll suck up all the oxygen in the passenger compartment, and you'll be dead.
I think this is a job you should undertake yourself.
Okay,
you could do it. I mean, it is a lot of work.
You'll need the book.
Right, I went to the Chilton's book.
No good. You need the actual Honda service manual.
Okay.
It's like about $900, I think.
Right, exactly.
No, it's $1,000. Everything's $1,000.
And then sit down and read it. And if after reading it, you say, oh, there's no way I could do this.
Right.
But it'll give you step-by-step instructions.
I remember we did this once many, many years ago before we really knew anything about cars. And we had decided we were going to do a job on my truck. So I went to GM and I bought the manual. And we were flipping through it one day to see how big. I forgot what the job was. But I looked at the page and there were like 6 steps. And we said, right. Piece of cake, right. We can do this. Finally, we decide to actually do it, and we notice that the first step is remove engine.
Right, okay.
So be careful when you get the book. Make sure you read it carefully so you know what you're really getting into.
Okay.
And
a friend and a Polaroid camera will help tremendously.
Yeah, because you'll never remember what stuff looked
like. That's what I'm you know, afraid of. And little
containers into which you can put... There are a million clips and screws. You won't believe it.
No, this is sounding worse and worse.
Oh, yeah. No, you'll never get it back together again. But you'll be the only one driving to work with a dashboard less.
Right.
The dashboard is not everything it's cracked up to be. And the car will still run. You might want to just take the dashboard out, put the heater core in, and leave everything else off. I mean, if it doesn't go back together, what do you care? You'll have heat.
Right. Doesn't matter anyway. Just put an extra blank
now,
on.
Now, you can do it, Jim, but get the book.
Okay.
And if it looks too daunting, then pay the money because you'll freeze this winter.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Good luck.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher. Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Brickford. Our engineer is John Dolly Parotti. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Michaela Ross. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Beeritz, Lemon Spritz, Harmony Grits, Bacon Bits, Olive Pits, Wiener Schnitz, Banana Splits, Sixer Schlitz, All That Fits, Free Lunch Blitz is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our windshield wiper replacement team is Ike and Zeke Learley. Our staff orthopedist is Denise Hoyt. Our petty cash auditor is Dave Reckoning. Our jewelry appraiser is Golda Meir. Our Ralph Crandon impersonator from the Dubai office is Mohammed Ahmed Ahmed. Our alignment expert is Lou Sagusi. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group, of course, is Erasmus P. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the postdoc panhandlers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1142, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, what happened to Honda?
Longtime Honda fan and Car Talk blogger Jamie Kittman remembers when Hondas were small, fuel efficient, and innovative. Now he's wondering if there's still any of those things.
Are you just mad because you couldn't fit the Pilot in your garage?
No, this has nothing to do with that. But we want to know what other Honda owners think. Check out Jamie's Honda Lament and add your thoughts, what's up with Honda, right now over at cartalk.com.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from NPR member stations and...
Tire Rack, offering more than 500 tire models from 17 manufacturers. Learn more at TireRack.com. And...
Reputation.com, with tools to monitor and protect the online reputations of doctors, lawyers, and business professionals. Learn more at Reputation.com. And...
Valvoline, maker of next-gen motor oil. Engine protection with oil made from 50% recycled stock. Learn more at Valvoline.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Panhandle is outside the NPR building, decide to move to a more dignified address whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find the complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. Support for our programming today comes from the Mad Platter Restaurant, practicing sustainability since 1989 and offering lunch and dinner service with daily entrees and an outside patio. Information at 242-2563. And by NS2, presenting Aretha Franklin live in concert at the Ryman Auditorium Wednesday, October 19th, 7:30 p.m. Tickets and information are available at Ticketmaster.com or the Ryman box office. And support comes from you, the listener. You can become a member or renew your membership online anytime at NashvillePublicRadio.org. Nashville weather for today, sunny skies and the high in the lower 70s. Clear tonight with a low in the upper 40s and more sunny skies tomorrow, the high in the lower 80s. It's 64.